hour two of the Blitz starting right now, live here on Fan Run Radio, 1340 AM, 105.7 FM, live in your Fan Run Radio app, free wherever you get your apps, and the video feed, live on Twitter if you want to watch along at home. Plus, we're live in the Fan Run Radio web browser as well. That live stream, powered by our friends at Linderman Sports Medicine. Visit Linderman Sports Medicine in Memphis right now if you're not active because of any discomfort or pain that is limiting any of your activities. You can check out the amazing work being done by Dr. Laura Linderman at Linderman Sports Medicine. They are located in Memphis, but people are coming from all over Tennessee and beyond to get back in the game of life without having to have surgery. So if you want to get back on your bike, back to the gym, walk at the park, or you know, really just have a healthier lifestyle, that can be achieved. Just visit LendermanSportsMedicine.com. That's L-E-N-D-E-R-M-O-N SportsMedicine.com. Let's get hour two rolling here with a little bit of an opening drive. Yeah, there's that music. Okay, well, now my phone, my ESPN app is just frozen on a screen that says, looking for even more Spain coverage? Tap for news and alerts. No, I don't want Spain coverage. I hope that Spain doesn't even get through today. They will
get through.
I don't know. What if they don't, though?
They will.
Isn't it possible they don't? Didn't we just go over
that? Yeah, if they lose and then Costa Rica wins, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what's going to happen.
All right.
Costa Rica's going to beat Germany. Japan's going to beat Spain.
All right.
And those two are getting through.
All right.
Just as everyone predicted.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, first down, another name has hit free agency, or the transfer portal, that is. Kavassier Smoke.
Ooh.
Yeah, Kentucky running back. Is a Kentucky running back no longer, as he is hitting the transfer portal. Had, nearly, I think, 1,500 total yards, 13 touchdowns. A really talented running back. He was playing second fiddle to Chris Rodriguez, but... definitely a really talented guy. A guy that had a relationship with Tennessee at one point. A guy that I think even after the game, you know, you saw some Tennessee players, like, talking to him and reportedly, like, talking about, hey, coming to Tennessee. I think he's definitely going to be a guy that's on this coaching staff's radar as someone to bring in as, you know, a veteran running back. Wouldn't be surprised again. Yeah, he ran for more than 1,500 yards, and he scored 13 touchdowns in his career. Should be interesting. The portal opens up the Monday after conference championship games, and so that would be, I guess, the 5th in 4 days. The transfer portal will open up, and the wild, wild west becomes a little bit more wild. I mean, in reality, these teams and these players have been in indirect communication with each other, and sometimes even direct communication with each other, for about a month now. You know, there are college programs that have already developed entire departments into basically just scouting and evaluating just about every player in college football just in case they enter the portal. So, like, teams know, have a general idea of some guys that are going to hit the portal. Players before they hit the portal have a general idea of who's going to be interested in them, and on the 5th, things are going to get a little bit crazy. Tennessee portal going to be massive for the Tennessee football team.
Portal waits for no one.
It's either I think will pretty much define Tennessee's ceiling next season, because I think you kind of get into an interesting place. Like, I think we saw it with Sam Pittman. Sometimes we see these new coaches overachieve in year two. But in this era of college football, oftentimes when a coach gets fired, a coach leaves, you have a bunch of recruits decommit and you have a bunch of underclassmen transfer, more so now than ever because of the one-time transfer rule. And, you know, with that can come a drop-off in year three a little bit, because that's when you really start to feel the effects of all those players that left. You know, it's not necessarily your first couple years, because you still have those veterans, a lot of veterans that stuck around, and Josh Heupel's had that. But when Josh Heupel first arrived, it was those underclassmen, that freshman class, that sophomore class, you know, that really got hit the hardest, where you had a bunch of sophomores leave. You had a bunch of people leave from your incoming recruiting class, and you can't quickly replace that. So, like, that's where you get into the struggle in year three, because you don't have those underclassmen, you know, those classes from the freshman and sophomore when you first got there that are full, that have been getting developed, that are, like, ready to take over and be that upperclassman. And that's why the portal will become so important. You're going to have to find a way to replace that on your roster, and you're going to have to find, quite frankly, you know, 4, 5, 6 potential starters in the transfer portal.
I'm just really appreciative for whoever deemed it to be called the portal.
Yeah, they really
did a great job with that. It could have been something really, like, not as cool. I mean, it could have just been, like,
transfer waiver period.
Yeah, like, yeah, like,
here's the transfer list or whatever else. But instead, yeah, we just
the portal.
Like, the portal.
It's awesome.
I love it.
I do appreciate that.
Second down.
Green Bay Packers, man. I already ruled them out. Green Bay Packers themselves might rule themselves out very soon. Aaron Rodgers is going to play on Sunday against the Bears despite picking up an injury. Had a little rib deal this past week. That doesn't plan on changing the rest of the season Aaron Rodgers playing, except if the Packers fall out of playoff contention. Apparently, they still have a chance to make a wild card, I guess. But they're 4-8. If they at some point are officially eliminated. Aaron Rodgers said he would understand at some point that there could be a conversation. It's one of those things where he's like, I understand that maybe there could be the chance for a potential conversation to where maybe that could lead to Jordan Love playing the rest of the season and giving him, I guess, some meaningful reps. Jordan Love came in on Sunday and looked pretty good against the Eagles. He's in his third year, but he hasn't really gotten to play much because of Aaron Rodgers, obviously. He's won 2 MVPs the last 2 years, but this year is not been very good for the Packers. Rodgers says he'd love to finish the season, but understands it's a business. And there's a lot of us older guys who play a decent amount. They might want to see some younger guys play. Hopefully we don't have to have that conversation, but I'll have an open mind if it comes up. Very interesting from Aaron Rodgers. I wouldn't have thought he would have taken that conversation very kindly. Which maybe he's just saying that, yeah. And then when the conversation comes, he's like, why would you say that? I'm leaving.
I don't know. I feel like I'm not surprised by anything that Aaron Rodgers does anymore. I don't know. Just, it's very strange.
And also, to be clear, Rodgers never said he would welcome that decision, just said that he would understand if it were to be considered. So maybe this is one of those things where it actually comes up. He's like, I never said that. This is actually what I said. I would understand. Not that I want it.
I didn't say I was vaccinated. I'm just immunized.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Man. So, Packers, all kinds of a disaster this year. Good thing they have Christian Watson. That's fun. Aaron Jones is good.
Third down. Knoxville has gone Hollywood, baby.
Really?
Yeah, the first official trailer for Universal Pictures film. Yeah, that Universal Pictures, the big one.
Big deal.
Their film Cocaine Bear.
Oh, okay. This is what you were talking
was
about.
Was released Wednesday. And that preview racked up over 11 million views in less than 24 hours on Twitter.
It was filmed in Knoxville?
So that's what we're getting to, right? An oddball group of cops, criminals, tourists, and teens converge in a Georgia forest, where a 500-pound black bear goes on a murderous rampage after unintentionally ingesting cocaine. That is the description of the movie from imbd.com. But within the trailer, it flashes a story inspired by true events, right?
I'm watching the trailer right now.
It flashes a story inspired by true events, and then millions of dollars worth of cocaine fell from the sky this morning in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Did this actually happen?
Mentioned. So that's what people kind of got pretty curious of. Like, wait a second, true events, Knoxville. We don't remember there being a cocaine bear in Knoxville. I certainly don't. I don't remember cocaine falling from the sky.
That bear just ingested a full brick of cocaine, it seems.
Yeah, and now he's about to go on a murderous rampage.
Oh, wow.
Just wait until the very, very last scene.
Oh, this
scene
is definitely
of the
this is a comedy, right? Like,
it's a drama.
This is a comedy.
Dramedy. Just wait till the very last scene. You get like a bear jumping into an ambulance. It's incredible.
Did they just pick Knoxville just because it's near the Smokies? Like,
so, the this has been described as a rampage horror comedy. And while there was no real-life rampage, the it does draw from real events. Apparently on September 11th, 1985, law enforcement descended on a house near Knoxville's Island Home Airport. Over where I live, where a parachutist was found dead. This comes from a news article from the New York Times from this event. Quote, a parachuting smuggler wearing combat fatigues and carrying pistols and knives plunged to his death today in a backyard when his parachute failed to open. At his side, 79 pounds of cocaine.
Wow.
The parachutist was identified as a 41-year-old Andrew Thornton, a former Army paratrooper and narcotics officer for the Lexington Police Department. The botched operation attempting to smuggle hundreds of pounds of cocaine from Colombia to America also led to the death of a black bear in Georgia and sent investigators to follow a trail of evidence across the southeast.
I just saw the bear do that leap.
Did y'all just see that link? Chris just said
Elon Musk commented on this as well.
Pablo Escobar.
That's his name. Oh, that's incredible.
This can't be a real story.
It's
shout
it's
out Knoxville.
A staggering amount of the highly addictive illegal stimulant.
Shout out Knoxville, man.
We finally made it. First we get Regal offices, now we get Cocaine Bear. What's next for our growing city? Yet to be seen.
Kids growing up will be like, oh yeah, Cocaine Bear.
Knoxville, yeah, city. Cocaine Bear. Yeah. You guys had that one bear thing that one time, didn't you?
Do you want me to ruin the story a little bit? It's not in Knoxville.
Yeah, I know. It's in Georgia is okay. Where the actual bear was.
So why do they say it's in Knoxville?
Well, that's where the parachuter fell from the sky. That was attached to the initial loss of cocaine.
And the cocaine must have spread out across.
Yeah, the cocaine ended up in Georgia where the initial crash was or something.
Wow.
Either way, I think the three of us need to go to the midnight premiere of Cocaine Bear. It's on my brother's birthday. I think that's what he'd want.
I think so, yeah.
Fourth down? I don't know how you're going to follow up Cocaine Bear.
I can't. It's about Kyler Murray. Very dramatic shift here. Kyler Murray, what's new? There's some drama with him. I feel like this is a drama hour. My second and fourth downs has just been NFL quarterbacks being dramatic. Kyler Murray and ex-teammate Patrick Peterson get into a little bit of an argument. Patrick Peterson apparently has a podcast because everyone has a podcast now. Shout out the Blitz. Patrick Peterson said, Kyler Murray doesn't care about nobody but Kyler Murray. Just a matter of the fact. Just in his podcast. Kyler Murray did not like those comments. I guess Peterson said that in terms of discussing Cliff Kingsbury, in terms of him ending up being the scapegoat for Arizona's season having gone the way it's been. And that's why Patrick Peterson said those things. Kyler Murray wrote, this isn't true. You want some explicitives. Patrick Peterson, you have my number. If you really felt like this as a big bro or mentor thing, you're supposed to call me and tell me, not drag me on your podcast so it can grow. Maybe a bit true. 2 years they were teammates. Very interesting.
I side with PP here.
Once again, in-season Hard Knocks, I haven't watched a single episode. But
I haven't yet. I will.
It's good.
I imagine it is.
I've been watching it. It's been good.
It really is picking up the Cardinals on a fantastic season of their history.
How pro-Cardinals is it? Do they do a pretty good job of just masking the fact that this is a disastrous season?
Yeah, kind of. It does a good job of showing the sense of urgency that the Cardinals kind of have this season. Cliff Kingsbury's in. I'm not going to give away too much, but he's
spoilers. Throwing
up,
lose.
He's throwing up some PowerPoints in team meetings. He's like, "All right, guys, all we got to do is win these next four games, and we'll be playing for the lead in the division by week, whatever." And it's in a perfect world, you are, but you're the Cardinals, and you're losing half these games. The show really makes you fall in love with Buda Baker even more, though.
Oh, Buda Baker is great. That guy deserves to win.
Yeah.
More than anyone I've ever seen, so hopefully he can go somewhere else.
Has he signed a big extension there? Yeah.
He's one of the highest paid safeties now, and he's going to be there for a while. They just need to move on from
He comes back from a high ankle sprain in a week.
Man,
and the entire team is just like, how is this guy doing it? He's like, I just love football.
I can't believe Cliff Kingsbury, after getting fired at Texas Tech, did not win a Super Bowl with the Cardinals. Like, how is he still
the coach there? That's
mind blowing that he wasn't very good as a college coach with one of the best quarterbacks of our generation.
It's just a different game, bro. Mm-hmm. It's just not the same.
But he coached Patrick Mahomes.
He just didn't have a good defense at Texas Tech.
To a 7-5 record.
But he looks good.
He does look good. He does look good.
Good opening drive.
He's got a good house in Arizona. Yeah. He's got one of those pleasing houses on draft night that you saw.
Good opening drive. Now we'll talk Vols McNeese State on the other side. Stay with us here on the Blitz. Who's this? Lukaku?
You don't know Romelu Lukaku?
He looks like Lamar Odom.
I mean, I didn't know the fool.
He's the one that scored against Team USA in the 2014 World Cup at the knockout stage to kind of like seal that win for Belgium. Remember that?
Well, yeah, he is undermining me right now.
He's one of the best goal scorers in Belgium history.
You wouldn't know it based on these last 3 minutes when he's just missed two wide open nets.
He's washed.
I don't know a whole lot about his playing background, but I just know like whenever playing in like he's in Premier League, isn't he?
He was with Chelsea, and then they just loaned him to Milan, but I think there's like a whole thing that he's coming back.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just remember hearing the announcer just, Lukaku!
Oh, yeah. He for a while, he was on Manchester United and Everton, and
there you go, Charlie. He was an Everton guy.
Yeah.
Go Everton! Tennessee beat McNeese State last night. It wasn't super pleasing on the eyes.
No.
Unless you really like to watch teams play good defense. I do. But
I did appreciate the defense.
Tennessee, a little bit of a slow start. Still got to 30 points by halftime, which is not a bad number to be at by any means, especially when you hold your opponent to 14.
Better than scoring 36 points.
Exactly.
In 2012.
A better second 10 years half. Ago. 46 points in the second half. A 76-40 win. Oh, cover the spread by a point.
Hey.
Let's go.
Shout out.
Those Vols know what they're doing.
Shout out.
You got to get some playing time for Toby Awaka last night. He got 5 minutes. You got to give B.J. Edwards a couple minutes there, 4 minutes.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah.
We were talking about that Georgetown-Tennessee game. Exactly 10 years ago from yesterday. It was exactly 10 years ago.
Whoa.
On the day.
Wow. November, look how far we've come.
November 30th, 2012. I'm sorry. Just had to throw that out there.
10 years ago.
10 years ago, exactly.
Now Tennessee is just one of the more dominant programs in college basketball regular season. And Georgetown hasn't won a Big East game in like 13 years. So
shout out.
Shout out us. Shout out Rick Barnes. It really does kind of give you some perspective when we get frustrated with Rick Barnes. It's like, man, our frustrations with Rick Barnes are like lost in March again after having like a top five team. And then it's just like, well, 10 years ago, our frustrations with Konzo Martin were not scoring 40 points in consecutive games. Could be worse. But just really a well-balanced game last night. Santiago Vescovi, the leading scorer, with 16. But like Tyreek got 10. Olivier got 11. Julian Phillips got 12. Olivier, by far the most efficient player. Him and Jonas Adu both. Adu. A wild stat line.
He blocked so many shots.
Yeah, he was just collecting block shots.
It was bad.
What did he finish with, six?
Tennessee as a team blocked 10 shots. Like, McNeese State could not get a bucket inside.
It was a small team, and you basically just manned them up all night.
Santi had a crazy block on a fast break. Like, it was a SWAT party out there.
Yeah, Santi got in on it. I mean, Jonas Adu had 4 blocks in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
He said after the game, hey, if you go here, you have to love playing defense. Said he's playing with 100% more confidence than he did last season.
You were
still without Josiah Jordan James. He went through warm-ups again, did not play. At this point, maybe you see him for Alcorn State on Sunday. Maybe you see him against Eastern Kentucky next Wednesday. I feel like you probably want to get him back on the court before you play Maryland on the 11th. But You also don't really want to risk anything with a guy that might be your most important player, might be your best player here in December. But I don't know. Did anything really stand out to you last night, Andy, or more just a real business-like performance?
Yeah, it was more just like the defense. It was really good. The offense really struggled there. I think at one point they were shooting like 5 of 17 from the floor. It just was, you know, it was hard. That zone did create a lot of difficulties, and I think they were trying to – the guards weren't taking as many open shots as probably they would. I think Coach Barnes said it really well in that, like, hey, like, I think he told him at halftime, he said, hey, Crochet almost scored. Coach Barnes said it good at halftime that, hey, if this team was playing you in a man-to-man and you had that look, would you take it? And they were kind of like, yeah. They're like, then take those shots. Like, just, like, if they're going to give you these looks in a zone, just because it's a zone doesn't mean you should, like, pass it. Like, you're getting open looks. Like, keep shooting. I think they were trying to force it inside a little bit too much even on the zone, and, like, they were just, like, that 1-3-1 would just collapse on the big men, and they'd fumble the ball, and there was a lot of turnovers early. So I feel like it took them a little bit of time to adjust to that zone. It's good practice, again, working on different defensive looks. But Tennessee's defense, I mean, really good. Like, McNeese State, they just couldn't even get a shot off. It was so good. Like, several shot clock violations. Guards were making it difficult to breathe. I mean, any drive was met by Jonas Adu, was met by Julian Phillips, was met by Olivier. Like, it just was – it was suffocating defense. For the last five games now, Tennessee has held their opponent to 50 or less points. Crazy. Like, that's a pretty absurd number.
And USC, the only one that went over that. And
yeah, and it was because it was overtime. You know, a lot of overtime.
Boogie Ellis was not missing. Contested shot after contested shot.
By the way, the fact that Drew Peterson was the guy to shoot all those last shots in clutch time was a big mistake.
Yeah, USC will not get to where they need to be until they realize that Boogie is the guy that should be.
The fact that he was as hot as. As hot as he was, the fact that Drew Peterson was their go-to, the last second shot guy, not the right call. But that's in the past now.
It was funny, too. There were some USC parents that I was sitting next to at a bar like later that night, and they had awful things to say about Drew Peterson. They hated him.
Oh, no.
They were just laying there. They were just sitting there laying into Drew
Peterson. Well, this is his first year there, right? Like, he came from Rice? Yeah.
I thought Peterson was there last year, too.
Okay, maybe.
I remember watching him.
He transferred, though, from Rice at one point. But, yeah, defense, great. I mean, there's not much better you could say about the defense. They forced, like, 24 turnovers, blocked 10 shots. They just made it difficult. That's going to be the staple of this Tennessee team. I've come to decide, you know, like, even when you're not shooting good, like, you just – if they're playing defense like that, they're going to be a tough team to beat.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes we do get a little bit frustrated by the offensive lulls, and you know, there is, I mean, you don't want to excuse that either, but if this team was playing middle of the pack defense, but scoring a ton of points and winning games, you know, like Arizona does, or like 81-70, would that make us feel better? Like if we beat McNeese State last night and we scored 85 points, but they scored like 70. 65, like, would we really feel a lot better? I don't think so. I mean, I think people assume that a team with a good offense or with a really good offense and a middle of the pack defense is much better than a team with a really good defense and a middle of the pack offense, which is kind of what Tennessee is. But I don't know. I kind of disagree. I think that a defense can travel more than an offense does. So I love having that defense to fall back on. I thought last night, see, you kind of said you thought the guards needed to shoot more. I kind of thought starting that game, Tennessee didn't successfully work it inside as well.
Well,
they threw it to the high post, like the defense converged
on them.
They were getting
swarmed as soon as it went down there, and they just couldn't hang on to the ball or get a good look. Like, they were getting to the line a lot.
But I also feel like they didn't necessarily, like, attack it as well as they should have initially, and then in the second half they did a better job. They couldn't really pass it to that entry point as much as they wanted to.
Yeah.
But I think the guards kind of realized, wait, we can dribble into this zone a little bit.
Yeah, I think it was just
and that really started to open things up.
They
and
just weren't, like, the guards just weren't feeling very comfortable with the zone at first. Like, it just, like,
right.
They didn't want to shoot because they felt like they, I felt like they didn't need to. And then, like, yeah, they would drive and have an open look as they drove, but then they would try to still get it to, like the big man.
We'll say, like, the longer – or I guess – well, first of all, I will say that the bigs last night, I was more pleased with their finishing. Like, I thought you saw a couple times where they finished with a dunk or finished going towards the basket, which is something, like, I've kind of been harping on, which is, like, something this team needs to get better at is finishing towards the basket, like finishing strong, dunking when you can. Because those bigs are really talented, but that's kind of like this the next step for them is being more consistent on that low block. I thought you saw them work towards that a little bit more last night, especially in the second half. Like, you saw Urosh finish one with a nice dunk. Like, you saw Olivier going towards the basket. I thought Olivier played a really nice game. I really like the way that all three of those guys are developing right now, with Adu, with Kamwa, with Urosh. You know, each kind of has their own role. Like, each kind of does something a little bit different. Jonas is that great defender that can still stretch you out a little bit. You know, Olivier can play outside of the paint. You know, he's a good post passer. He can knock down some jump shots. And then, like, Urosh is, you know, he's the big physical. Like, he can bully you down in the paint. He can go get those boards. He does a nice job away from the ball, like, sealing off drives, setting some screens. And, you know, he kind of just gives you that physicality, too. I like the way that all three of these guys are kind of finding their role and adding to this basketball team. And then, you know, I like when you go with Julian Phillips at the four, like he did a couple times last night, too, when you can flash him to the high post, when he can be the guy to take that jump shot against the zone. But good to get some work against a 1-3-1. It was good to get some work against USC's zone a week ago. It's always nice to just get those different early season looks so you're more prepared for everything as the season goes on. And again, just kind of a workman's-like performance last night. I think the big question still surrounding this basketball team right now is what are you going to look like when Josiah is healthy? Like, the longer it goes with him not playing and you know, the more this team wins, the more challenging it becomes for Rick Barnes to manage his rotation when you're fully healthy. Because obviously, you know, no one's suggesting that Josiah's role decreased. Like, no one's suggesting that he doesn't necessarily, like, start or anything like that. But you're going to have to figure out what you're going to do with your current lineup and then when you throw Josiah into things. I imagine it's going to look, unfortunately, like Jemai Meshack gets less playing time. You like what you've seen from him, but also, I mean, you're just going to have to make a really difficult decision. Do you take Julian Phillips off the floor in your starting lineup? Do you have...
I don't think you can, though.
I don't think you can either. Do you let Josiah potentially come off the bench with Zakai, but also play the majority of the
minutes? You might see that to start just until you figure it out.
I could see that to start, and then maybe if it works, like, if he's comfortable doing that, I wouldn't be shocked as long as he's playing the majority of minutes. Or does Rick Barnes finally give in a little bit and go away from the two bigs starting lineup, which then cuts down that rotation even more because you have three guys you all want to get a lot of minutes? But I don't know. I think the best answer would be to go with that smaller lineup with Josiah or Julian Phillips, you know, at the four, but basically you're playing positionless basketball with four guys all around one big. I think that Tennessee's offense operates best when you're doing that, but I don't know. That's still just, to me, like, the biggest question is what is that going to look like? But big win against McNeese State. Wasn't always pretty to start, but that defense, man, it's special to watch. Enjoy it. Like you mentioned earlier, Andy, KenPom right now, the best defense in the history of KenPom's rating system to this point.
It's pretty crazy. Should we look at KenPom right now? Let's see.
You got the game Sunday, right? Against Alcorn State?
Yep.
Yeah, Mr. Andy Brock on the call. Should be a fun one. I'm loving Tennessee basketball right now, man. Feast week, I feel like that's when you fully kind of get yourself into basketball season. And this basketball season is going to be a fun one for sure. There were some good basketball games last night, too. But we'll catch a break here. Fact or Fiction on the other side. Stay with us on the Blitz. One more time. All right, all right, all right. Let's play some fact or fiction. Sam, Over to you, brother.
Alrighty. Fact or fiction, Cincinnati is the best destination for Deion Sanders.
Say that one more time.
Cincinnati is the best destination.
In my head, I heard you say San Diego, and I was like, well, I don't know. They did produce Harbaugh.
Maybe he wants to go to
Harbaugh's coaching career started there. Just throwing that out there.
Shout out.
You know, I'll say fact. I'd say fact. It's, right now, I mean, basically, he's deciding between four things, right? He's deciding between staying at Jackson State for another year. He's deciding between Colorado, Cincinnati, and USF. I think with Colorado and USF, you have tempered expectations, which would be nice. You know, you can have time to get comfortable to build that program up, but I don't think there's any pressure to win immediately or anything like that. With USF and Cincinnati, I think you kind of get, you know, a fertile recruiting ground. Like, you have an established program with a base to get recruits there and to get guys out of the portal. And, you know, I think you're in a good spot in the country to get some talent there. And then, you know, there's only one thing that kind of has all three of those, I guess, or at least, you know, two of them. Cincinnati and Colorado both have the benefit of being a Power 5 school, or at least Cincinnati about to, you know, headed to the Big 12. So I think, you know, you can't get all three, tempered expectations, fertile recruiting, and Power 5 conference, but you can get fertile recruiting and a Power 5 conference, and that's Cincinnati. You can't get that at Colorado. You can't get that at USF. So I don't know, like, that's where I would go with Cincinnati. I just think that, like, they're a more established team. You're going to have some talent there. If you hire Deion, that talent's going to stick around. You can get some guys out of the portal. And heading the Big 12, you know, I think he'd have a chance to make that program kind of his own. Yeah, I think fact, that is the best spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, out of all the options, that would be a really good spot to land. Yeah, I mean, I'll probably go fact as well. I don't know if it's, like, the best fit. It feels like a weird fit. Like, I don't know if it's, like, necessarily, like, hey, this makes sense. But for Deion, yeah, I mean, that's a great place to start, Rick, right? I mean, that's a great jump, I would think. So, I don't know if they offer him. If I'm Deion, I'm pretty heavily considering that. I don't know if maybe he thinks it's not a best fit. I'm sure he has an idea of, like, what makes sense to him. But, yeah, I'll go fact. I mean, that's a great job.
All righty. Fact or fiction, USC is the team in the most danger on conference championship Saturday.
Yeah, I'd say fact, and I'd say fact really in more ways than one. I would say that at this point the top three is safe. Georgia, Michigan, TCU, I think they're all safe. I think all of them could lose and still get in at this point. But USC, if they lose, they're done. And secondly, I think they're in more danger because they're playing a Utah team that, A, is kind of, you know, run the Pac-12 lately, but B, has already beaten USC once this year. You know, I Friday night, 8 o'clock, I wouldn't be surprised if Utah wins that football game. I kind of think they will and knock USC out of the playoffs and put Ohio State back in. But TCU, I think, is safe at this point. Even if you lose to a top 10 Kansas State team to fall to 12-1. You already did the whole undefeated season thing. You know, you're established at number three, and there's no strong candidate to replace you. So
I'm just saying I would not be surprised if TCU lost and the narrative became Ohio State should get in. I honestly would not be surprised. So I do feel like TCU does need to win this game in a lot of ways because, trust me, I feel like they will get switched up on in a heartbeat to an Ohio State and Alabama if they lose this game, especially by more than a touchdown to Kansas State. So I do think TCU, you know, they should be not nervous, but, like, I feel like they've got a lot to play for. But, yeah, clearly it's USC, given that they already have a loss. Utah is a good team. And I feel like it's the classic Pac-12 situation where they're about to get another team in the playoff, and then they lose on championship Friday or whatever they play. They lose in their championship game, and the Pac-12 has no teams in the playoffs because they just consume themselves whenever they finally have a team that's right there.
You know who's 3-0 in games against top three opponents in his career?
Oh, is it Cameron Rising?
It is Jeff Brohm at Purdue.
Whoa.
What if they knock off Michigan?
What do you do with Michigan, Ohio State? Then you have the dilemmas like, well, clearly Tennessee beating Alabama didn't matter.
Right.
Does Michigan not beating Ohio State not matter just because they lost to Purdue?
But then it's also like Michigan earned that opportunity to lose to Purdue because they beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
I know, but
then their resume is just so weak outside of the one win against Ohio State.
Really, it could get fishy. Really, if they just didn't, they're like a correctly called offensive pass interference away from being in the danger zone.
Scary.
All right, let's go into some college basketball
here.
They'll
all lose by 50, and all their starting quarterbacks will get hurt, and then they'll put Tennessee in.
Tennessee would find a way to still be at 5, I feel like.
Yeah, I do, too.
Yeah. No, they'd probably drop down.
All right, fact or fiction, it's time to worry about North Carolina basketball this season. Just dropped a game against Indiana yesterday.
Big facts.
Fiction.
What is it, Moneybag Yo? Big facts?
Fiction.
Major facts. This UNC team, already 5-3, lost to an unranked Iowa State team. Who's now ranked. Lost to an Alabama team.
Good team.
In four overtimes. And now lost to an Indiana team that's
really
a top 10 team. Like, none of those losses on their own are bad. But the fact that you've lost now all three of those in a row,
and
coming
lost
a day
to
after you almost lost to Portland, where you trailed most of the game, where you kind of messed around with UNC Wilmington, where you kind of messed around with Charleston, where you messed around with Gardner Webb. This team went on a miracle run to the Final Four, to the NCAA championship, and everyone just erased all that happened prior to the NCAA tournament from their memory. It's like, do we not remember that this same UNC team barely made the tournament? Do we not remember that they were getting blown out at home, that like they hadn't had a quadrant one win basically until the ACC tournament? Like, if it wasn't a weak field, they might not have even made it in the first place if they hadn't have gone on that run in the ACC tournament. Like, yeah, I think there's cause for concern, because like, what if they were just a team that got hot in the tournament? What if the North Carolina that we saw for the entirety of the season is the North Carolina that we know will be post Roy Williams? I would definitely be concerned if I were a North Carolina fan, and I probably wouldn't want to admit it. You know, I'd probably still just keep telling myself, hey, we went to the national championship in year one. But I mean, that's kind of the crazy part about March Madness. Sometimes teams make a run and play outside of themselves. And I would say that last year, the data point from November up until March is much more reliable, a bigger data point than a run in March. And now here you are, 5-3 again. I would be very much keeping close tabs on this UNC team.
I think that makes sense in the terms that they probably shouldn't have been preseason ranked number one. Like, they were basing it too much on, hey, they made the championship game and they returned so many guys, they are clearly number one, when that's not how they were the whole season. So I feel like them being ranked number one was not helpful for them. You know, like, that was probably a bit too bold for a team that wasn't as spectacular the entirety of the season last year. I mean, Tennessee beat UNC by 20 at this point in the season. All that to say, it's still just this point in the season. Like, they're playing really good teams. What happens now is not going to indicate how you're playing later in the season. And, you know, UNC, they did peak at the right time, but that's part of it. Like, can you peak at the right time? So, yeah, maybe if UNC wants to be a one seed, they should be worrying. I don't think they're clearly not in a position to be a one seed right now. So, but I still think this team is going to be very competitive in March, and that's ultimately the key. So I'm not pressing like a panic button or anything, but yeah, if it's in terms of being a top five team in the nation, then sure, worried.
Right. A little Vols question here. Fact or fiction, Jonas Adu should get more minutes than Euros.
Is he getting more now?
I think he did yesterday. I mean,
that's a really good question.
He's already getting more minutes now.
I mean, yesterday he got 16, and Uroš got 13.
On the season, Jonas already has four more a game than Uroš.
I guess a little bit more like starting role, I guess.
I don't mind him coming off the bench.
I prefer AD over Euros, honestly.
Oh wow.
Oh, wait, did we get a goal?
Almost. Lukaku's missed like 10.
Lukaku's had about
10.
5 scoring chances in the last 20 minutes, it seems like.
I just saw a video that was like someone standing right in front of a net and kicking it very far to the right, and it just said Lukaku anytime he's been in front of the net today.
Dude.
Oh. I don't even want – I'm so mad at Lukaku, I don't even care about fact or fiction right now.
Dude, that was a goal.
I think I might have accidentally scored one of these. Like, I might have taken a worse touch there, and it just would have hit off me and gone to the net.
Oh, man.
We got 4 minutes of additional time. So as this stands right now, Belgium is out if they don't score.
I believe so,
yeah,
right,
no, Belgium's out if they don't score.
What if Canada gets an equalizer?
Then, yeah, they're still out because Morocco has more points than Belgium right now, yeah. No, Belgium has to win.
It's incredibly disappointing.
Wow.
I feel like this game's ending quick, too. Or we're just taking a while. You know what?
Our show's almost done.
I don't know. We'll save that question for another date. I just don't know. I'll go faction and call it a day. Best bet to wrap up the show on the other side. Wrapping up the show like we always do with a little best bet. Man, Morgan Wallen just announced his world tour.
Not coming to Tennessee.
Knoxville did not even get... Tennessee didn't even get a stop.
Yeah, he didn't even do a Nashville one.
He's here all the time anyway.
Really? I'm surprised. I don't know. I figured Tennessee guy would have come to Tennessee. That's disappointing.
He's here all the time anyways.
All right, Andy. Fine. We get it. You hate Morgan Wallen.
He's here all the time.
You hate Tennessee. Sam, your best bet today?
Yeah, my best bet. Give me Thursday night football and give me a Dawson Knox touchdown at plus 280.
What was the first thing you said?
Dawson Knox.
Oh, I thought you said give me something and then
I
give
said
me...
give me Thursday night football. Oh. Give me Dawson Knox to score.
Is that your same game parlay?
Yeah,
leg?
Are we doing a parlay too?
Yeah, we are.
Okay, I'm going to go with...
It's over.
It's over.
Oh.
I'm going to go with...
Agony. That stings. I had a Morocco-Belgium parlay.
Mac Jones under 225.5 passing.
Mac Jones under 225.5 passing?
Yeah.
I like that. I like that a lot. Andy?
We're doing the parlay thing?
Yes. Yeah, we're doing the parlay thing. And your best bet.
Nick Folk. He makes over 2 field goals. Is that a thing?
I wish.
Is it?
Nick Folk has been insane this year.
Is that something we can get? It is not.
Look at Morocco. Man, look at the joy for Morocco. They won the group.
Morocco!
They won the group. Okay, fine. Then I'll go Ramondre Stevenson anytime touchdown.
Ramondre Stevenson anytime touchdown.
Yep.
What's your best bet?
Pistons Mavericks, the only NBA game on tonight.
Is it over or under?
Oh, it's always over.
You hit your over yesterday, I think. Yeah.
221.5 going over. Of course I hit the over last night. Yeah. Easy.
It's actually remarkable.
Has Andy lost an NBA over?
I don't think he has.
I don't think he has.
I legitimately don't think
he
has.
Follow my lead, guys.
My best bet today, it's going to be UConn -8.5 at home against Oklahoma State. As for my same game parlay leg, I'm going to take Stephon Diggs under 84.5 yards receiving. So our same game parlay, Mac Jones under 225.5 for Ramondre Stevenson, anytime touchdown scorer, and Stephon Diggs under 84.5 receiving yards. $25 net you $152 if you want to go bet that over on FanDuel. But that'll do it for us today. For Sam Beard, for Andy Brock, I'm Charlie Collier. We hope you have a fantastic rest of your day. We'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. Talk Sports, John Reed, Cody McClure, they're up next. Stay locked in, Fan Run Radio.